welcome to Skagit Talks. Interviews with interesting people from Skagit Valley College, as well as folks from around the Skagit Valley. Now, Skagit Talks. Now, KSVR, Skagit Valley's community radio, presents the news.
If you haven't gotten your H1N1 flu shot yet, there is still time. The Skagit County Health Department is continuing its campaign to immunize as many citizens and children in the county as possible to prevent flu hospitalizations and deaths. While the disease is not as prevalent at the moment, it is possible there could be a third wave of H1N1 or swine flu. On February 4th, the health department visited local schools, vaccinating another 900 students, staff, and a few parents. Second doses were also given to children under 10 years of age. Parents are reminded to bring their children under 10 to their health providers, local pharmacies, or the health department for a second H1N1 vaccination at least 28 days after the first flu shot was given. A recent national survey showed that up to 80% of kids under 10 were overdue for their second dose. The health department is open from 9 to 4, Monday through Friday, and the H1N1 vaccine is free to all. Vaccination is the best protection against the H1N1 flu. So far in Skagit County, 27,619 people have been vaccinated. This equates to 25% of the population. 9,226 children have been vaccinated so far, or 33% of local children. 2,452 kids under 10 have received their second dose, or 52%. The vaccine is offered to businesses, senior living environments, etc., on-site, free of charge. Contact Debbie at 336-9477 to set up a clinic at your location. Training and teaching the next generation of Washington's farmers could get easier thanks to legislation passed recently by the Senate. Senate Bill 6349, sponsored by 40th District Senator Kevin Ranker, would allow internships for aspiring farmers, providing first-hand experience in their future line of work. The art of farming cannot be learned in the classroom, Ranker has said. First-hand experience is necessary in order to promote agriculture for future generations. Current laws made it difficult and costly for small farmers to have interns, so this bill allows small farms to establish internship programs for future farmers to pass on crucial vocational knowledge of farming practices and enterprises. This education program supports the continued growth of the agricultural industry. After farmers in my district came to me, we saw that red tape was getting in the way of farmers teaching their skills to younger individuals, Ranker said. This bill ensures Washington farms can continue teaching future farmers for generations to come. The measure would allow farms with gross sales of less than $250,000 annually to establish internship programs for future farmers who are not enrolled in classes to work on farms throughout the state. The average age of a farmer in Washington is 57 years old, Ranker said. If we're serious about promoting agriculture in Washington, we're going to have to encourage younger people to get into the farms and get their hands dirty. Farmers interested in employing interns would submit a written application for certification to be reviewed by the Department of Labor and Industries. The farm would be required to specify the nature of the work interns would perform and how the experience would provide them with vocational knowledge and skills. Senate Bill 6349 now goes to the House for consideration. You've seen it on garages, storefronts, and fences. Graffiti has become a big problem in Skagit County. Criminal street gang tagging and graffiti is a gross misdemeanor, and the city of Mount Vernon has found a way to handle this difficulty. Lieutenant Chris Kamuk of the Mount Vernon Police Department explained how the Youth Graffiti Abatement Program got its start.
Kind of a little background, I guess, leading up to it. Between like 2007 and 2008, the city of Mount Vernon specifically was experiencing probably on average about 400 incidents of graffiti per year. And our courts were seeing these juvenile offenders who were coming through their courtroom and maybe being charged with these types of offenses or other misdemeanor-related offenses, and some of these youth were gang-involved. And our courts were wanting an ability to sentence them to community service hours so they could experience some of the impact of their crimes. However, there wasn't a community service program in place to do that. The way the court community service works is they get sentenced to community service hours, and then the offender may have to go out and find that community service location, or with probation staff might have to try to find a community service location for them to work off their hours. And so it was difficult to, say, find a specific victimhood experience graffiti to meet kind of the intent of what the court wanted to do. So we had some conversations with Superior Court Judge John Meyer, probation staff from Youth and Family Services, our Parks Department, our Police Department, to see if there was something that we could create that would fill this void. And the concept was to kind of mirror the success we were having with our adult work crew. And our adult work crew is a program where nonviolent offenders trade jail time for their sentences to work off their sentence in the community. So they come out each day, they work for a Parks Department crew supervisor, they work in our parks, they work in our business districts, they work along our streets. They do a number of different jobs and things like that, and then they trade their jail time off instead. And of course, then the city reduces its jail bill. So the concept was to take a look at the success of that program and see if something could be done as it related to juveniles. At the same time, the Washington State Sheriffs and Police Chiefs Association was offering grant opportunities for some creative ways to address graffiti in communities, graffiti abatement. So, again, we had these conversations with this group, and our Parks Department was willing to look at hiring a part-time supervisor for a new work crew that would specifically just be juveniles, because you can't mix juveniles and adults. So we couldn't use our existing work crew program in its current form. We needed to create something that was conducive to juveniles. So the concept was the Parks Department would be willing to look at that. The WASPIC grant would provide the funding source to do it. The courts then would be able to select offenders who were coming through who either had committed offenses of graffiti or gang-related offenses that led to graffiti or something along that line, and then they would sentence them to community service hours on this work crew. And then the probation staff, what they would do is when these individuals were assigned, they did a couple of things. One is they were also creating a classroom training instruction, almost like a civics class, because they were finding a lot of these kids had no idea of some of the basic civics concepts. They didn't even know who the mayor of the town was or what the role of the city council was or some of the costs and impacts of what their crimes were doing. So anyway, it was a dual-purpose community service program. The kids would have to go through some classroom education, again, some basic civics, and then they would have to work off their time as well. And then the police department's role was mainly to, identify where the graffiti had occurred, determine, if the graffiti could be left for like a weekend work crew, wasn't a highly visible spot, and then provide that list to the Parks Department each weekend so that they could go out and hit the locations.
Funding for the program originally came from a grant that expired last summer. A new grant is currently funding the program.
This concept, of course, needed funding, and it wasn't something that we currently had in our budget to do. And it was a pilot project that we believed would be successful, but it hadn't been done yet before. So the Washington State Council of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs had offered, through their association, some graffiti abatement grant opportunities. They put the word out to all the law enforcement agencies saying we have these mini grants, I guess you could call them. They were about $10,000, and they were looking for people who had some kind of creative ideas in addressing graffiti in their community. And we thought that this concept of a juvenile graffiti abatement crew might be just what they were looking for. So we applied for the grant, and we outlined the concept that we were talking about here, and they liked it. And so they funded us in July of 2008. And that grant period ran from July of 2008 till basically the end of June of 2009. And then we were very successful during that grant period in their eyes, but they didn't have an ability to keep continuing that grant. So we actually applied for a second grant for this year that we're currently operating under. It's a justice assistance grant through the Burn Grants. And it was part of, tied to the federal stimulus package. So they take a look at uniform crime reports for our community, and that's how they base the level of grant award that they provide. And in our case, we were eligible for about $51,000. And that went to more than just this project I'm talking about here. It was also tied to stimulus for hiring and things like that. So there were several other equipment pieces we were able to pick up. We did some additional part-time hiring inside our office. But it also provided us the $10,000 to continue this juvenile graffiti abatement program through next year.
The graffiti program allows youthful offenders to do their community service on weekends.
One of the things we realized was that with juveniles, if we were going to be successful in getting them out to do community service, you know, they're in school 5 days a week, or supposed to be at least. And so our current adult work crew works Monday through Friday. They don't work on the weekends. So we needed something that was established for like Saturdays or Sundays types of thing. So our parks director, Larry Otis, agreed to hire and train a part-time supervisor for this juvenile work crew who would work Saturdays and work specifically with juveniles. And so as we covered 25 weekends, I believe it was, last year. And on those weekends, there's 5 slots available for offenders. And so it gives our court an opportunity to, you know, identify those offenders as they come through during the week, and then our probation staff kind of schedule them to do those hours, and then they report to our parks department. So all our parks department does is supervise them when they're there and notify the probation staff that they were there and that they were completing their hours.
Deciding what cleanup jobs will be assigned to youth teams depends on where the graffiti is located.
Our first look is public places or private places who have given us permission to remove it, who have already been victims. That's our first choice. So, like during the week, our staff who are going out and taking reports of graffiti, they investigate that graffiti and photograph it and do their normal course of their investigation. Then our crime prevention division here, the Mount Vernon Police Department, we list and log that graffiti, and we take a look at it and we say, is this the type of location that if we leave it till Saturday, it's not going to be a real blight on the community or a real promo piece, say, for the gang who tagged it or the tagger who tagged it, depending on what type of graffiti it is. And if it's a location that's highly visible, we'll work with the property owner to remove it right away, or our adult work crew will go out and hit it and get it removed. But if it's something that can wait till Saturday, then it goes on the list, and then they go out and hit that first. When there aren't graffiti incidents that they can do, which is pretty rare, we usually have work for them during the week, but then they'll work in our parks. They will do graffiti or etching that are in the bathrooms. You know, they'll paint stalls, or they will paint damaged areas, or they'll repair damaged areas. You know, whatever work that can be found that kind of meets the intent of the grant.
The teen crews recently helped a senior citizen with her ongoing graffiti problem.
We had one really kind of neat project that we recently did with this crew. It was tied to graffiti, but it was a bit more longer-term pilot project. What this was is we had a senior lady who lived in one of our neighborhoods who just happened to be in a corner location where her fence would get muralized with graffiti on almost a monthly basis. Large amounts of graffiti would go on. It was really driven just because of the location of her fence and the style of her fence. You know, it provided basically a billboard. And so we took a look at that. She had painted it over several times herself, but she was on a fixed income, and it was difficult for her to cover that cost each month. And so we had the graffiti crew do it a couple of times, and we realized, you know, we're just keeping to paint this thing over. We need to rethink the approach on this. So what we did is we talked with her, and we pointed out the fact that the fence was acting like a billboard. And we said, we need to do something to give it a different look. And, of course, she still wanted the security of the fence and all of that, and we weren't planning on taking it down. But we worked with the Community Wellness Council, who actually donated some funds, and they purchased some 4 to 6 foot high Paradallis cedars, about 15 of them. They purchased these Paradallis cedars, and the property owner gave us permission, and then the juvenile graffiti crew went out that Saturday, and the first thing they did was paint it over all the fresh graffiti that was on the fence to take it back to its original state. And then they planted these Paradallis cedars kind of about every, you know, 3 to 4 feet in front of the fence. And what that did was take away that billboard effect. And for the last at least 12 months, we haven't had any graffiti there in that location. So that's the type of work that this crew is able to allow us to do.
Currently, this program is only in effect in Mount Vernon, although the courts can assign offenders from any Skagit County locality to the Mount Vernon Parks Department work crews. You have been listening to KSVR 91.7 FM, news you'll want to know in Skagit Valley. I'm Joanna Bruno. Thanks for listening. And now, stay tuned for another special Skagit Talks interview.
Welcome to Skagit Talks. I'm Dave McConnell, your host today. When I was in middle school and high school and college, I spent a lot of time at county and state fairs, showing animals, riding on gizmos that made me dizzy, and eating a lot of crap that my mother would never let me eat at home, and of course, trying to make connections with girls. But I was younger then, a lot younger then, actually. County fairs have changed since those long ago years, and I'm happy to have in the studio today someone who can help me and you learn about those changes, Brett Lunsford. Brett, welcome to Skagit Talks.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Brett, I've heard rumors this is not your first visit to KSVR. What's that all about?
Well, I used to have a radio program dealing with Northwest music here at Anacord, at the radio station, and we played both in-studio performers, acoustic performers, and music that had been made by Northwest area artists, original music by and large.
Now, records, CDs?
It was mostly records in those days, yeah. From the Sub Pop label or the K label or the Estrus label up in Bellingham. We also would play bands like Cranial Decomposition from right here in Mount Vernon.
So, in some ways, things haven't changed a whole lot because we still have some DJs here that occasionally will pull up some local bands, almost always on CD now. We haven't had much in the way of live in-studio stuff recently, but we have done that in the fairly recent past. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the county fair. You've recently been hired to coordinate the program for the 2010 Skagit County Fair. What's your background that would lead you to take on a task like that?
Well, I have a background in music and events coordination, having been in bands throughout the 80s and 90s and organizing music events like the What the Heck Fest in Anacortes, involved in past festivals in Anacortes and Olympia and other nonprofit events like Friends of the Forest benefit dinner and such things.
So have you spent all your life then here in Skagit County?
I was born in Anacortes, grew up working from a young age in the berry fields here in the valley for Egg Burrs and Shane Brothers and, picking strawberries and cucumbers and then working in the fishing industry out of Anacortes for years. I had my own retail shop in Anacortes, a camera, book, record store for about 15 years called The Business. And we had a lot of performances and such in our cafe and, learned to appreciate what local artisans had to offer.
But what led you to take on this position to coordinate the program for the fair?
Well, I have a lot of belief in the value of local culture and celebrating local culture from wherever you are. But because I'm from Skagit County, I have a healthy amount of Skagit pride. And I think that one of the consistencies from my days being a DJ here at the station is that I wanted to give a forum for what people were expressing locally and with their music and even with their poetry and other things. And so that's often overlooked, and people who have something to say but don't feel like they have an audience that's willing to pay attention, I think that there needs to be more of that. And that's why I'm a firm believer in local radio, because I think it's a real service to people to get to know what's going on and who each other is.
Right. Does this mean that the fair's not going to look the same this year as it has in the past?
Well, at its core, it's going to be a fair in the traditional ways. You know, we look at what people say brings them to the fair when they fill out the surveys there, and it's the fair food, it's the carnival, it's the animals, and those things are going to be at the fair. We're going to try to also tie into some of the things that are growing in interest in the area in terms of organic agriculture and farmers market type booths and local performers. Our theme, which I'm excited about, is bringing it all back home, not only a Bob Dylan album, but a concept about saying this is a celebration of Skagit Valley and its people, and we want to know what you are entering in the fair. What we want to encourage people to think about their craft, their hobby, their preserves, their photography, and encourage them to enter that into the fair, because we want them to think of it. We want more people to think of the Skagit County Fair as our fair, not just something that someone else does.
So, as I recall, a couple of the things from fairly recent years at the Skagit County Fair has been rodeo, what I took to be, since I'm not a country music fan, but sort of second-level country musicians. Are we going to have that sort of thing at the fair this time?
Well, we probably aren't going to be having an Elvis impersonator this year. We are going to be focusing on the musicians from Skagit County. And not to say that we won't have entertainment from outside of the county, but if it's not Skagit County, then it's going to probably be from this area. And we're going to look outside of people who are regulars on the fair circuit and say, you know, look to the people who have a draw locally and can bring the vitality of their audience into the fair.
Do you have anybody lined up yet, or are we too far away?
A little bit too far away. I'm at the point right now of just taking care of a lot of the nuts and bolts issues, and I'm really excited about starting to program the entertainment, but I'm having to discipline myself to wait a little bit. But by February, I'll be starting to make contacts with musicians and other entertainers.
Has there been any feedback from entertainers in the area that you know talking about this?
Yeah, a number have offered their services, some returning, some who haven't been around for a while, and we're encouraging people to contact us at skagitcounty.net/fairgrounds, and we're going to have our application forms for various vendors and entertainers and such on there, and also just our email addresses if you want to contact us.
Okay. But you say they can go to this website. Will they find the email and phone numbers there?
Exactly.
And it sounds like it may be too early to ask what the email address is, too.
fairgrounds@co.skagit.wa.us.
That sounds simple. We may have you repeat that again before we get off the air for people who are interested to sort this out. What kinds of, you said you've had some people say they're interested. What kinds of things do they do that they want to bring to the fair? What are you hearing from people?
One of the things that people are excited about is bringing back some of the simple participatory activities that happened at the fair in the past. And I'm going to be I gave a slide presentation to the fair advisory board on some of the historical photos that are in the archives at the fairgrounds. And we are going to show that to the commissioners on February 2nd at their meeting, and that's going to be available for view to the public on Channel 21.
That's the county commissioners?
Yeah, the county commissioners. And it's just a 10-minute kind of retrospective on things that happened in the fair at the past. They used to have a parade at the fair that was a pretty big deal in downtown Mount Vernon. We're not going to do that this year. It's been a few years since they've had it, and it, I'm not saying it won't ever happen again, but I think it's right now it's a bit much to add to the plate. They used to also have royalty at the fair, which was a very big deal, both in terms of the prestige of that, but also the ticket sales that were required to qualify for royalty was a good way to drive attendance at the fair. One of the interesting things I found out looking over the fair materials, looking through a program for the 1953 fair that my grandfather, Floyd Lunsford, had performed with his Anacortes band at the fair in 1953. So in that sense, you know, we are bringing it all back home with my participation this year.
Not only in a sense of what happens, but because of who's involved in what's happening.
Exactly.
This is interesting. If someone has a particular skill that they want to bring, let's get back to how they can get a hold of you or get a hold of the fair people and let you know.
fairgrounds@co.skagit.wa.us is our email address, and that's a good way to contact us. And on that, you'll find other information, applications, et cetera. We're updating that currently so that there's going to be the forms that you can get on for if you want to be a vendor or have a booth at our garage sale, which is upcoming in April. On the 10th and 11th of April.
What's the purpose of the garage sale?
Garage sale is one of the non-fair events that we're going to continue to do. It was formerly billed as the world's largest garage sale and then has kind of evolved into the antiques, craft, and flea market. We're going to call it the antiques, craft, and garage sale and just open the fair up that weekend, the second weekend of April, for a chance for people to sell their wares and come get some bargains. And
does the fair committee or whoever's in charge reap some benefits other than sort of public relations from something like that?
Oh yeah, the vendors, the people who are selling, they pay a fee to be there, and there's a $2 admission charge to get in, and that helps to generate some income for the fairgrounds, which is an issue this year that Skagit County Fairgrounds has to be a little bit more aware of making things pay than they have in the past.
And the fairgrounds, the fair committee's in the same bind that the county and the state and the country is, for that matter,
exactly.
Financially. So this is part of the reason that things are – is that part of the reason that things are – changing a little bit?
Yes, I would say it's a large part, and it's what we're looking to do is go back to some of the basics in the past where the resourcefulness that's at the heart of an agricultural lifestyle is brought into the fair at every level in the planning and in who we're choosing for entertainment and the kind of the expectation of people saying, we believe in the fair and we don't want it to go away. We are willing to get more involved and not just sit on the fence.
Let somebody else
do it. Exactly.
Before we close, do you have a fair dates for this year at hand?
I do. August 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th.
So the middle of August, the 2010 Skagit County Fair with the new theme, bringing it all back home. I have been talking with Brett Lunsford, who was recently hired to coordinate the program for the 2010 Skagit County Fair, about what we can expect in August. Brett, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
This is Dave McConnell signing off for Skagit Talks.
Skagit Talks was produced by Joseph C. McGuire and engineered by Jay Charles. Tune in next time for more Skagit Talks.